my city, flickering dirty neon over alleys, mean and dirty streets, while my neighborhood is torn down around me.
Hello, everybody, from that nightclub at the end of the earth. At the end of the world. It is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, here with you again on Sunday, the 3rd of November, 2013. Every week we make another show. I breathe another sigh of relief and go, how did we get this far? But we did. Kellen Baker will be with us tonight. I'll bring her on here in just a minute. There are two big words that have been running in my life this week. They both start with the letter V. The first is venality. Venal, base, corrupt, careless, absolutely without concern for anything but the most. Anyway, venal, we know the word. So in Japan this week, the mayor of, the governor, the head of the Fukushima prefecture, has announced that they're giving free homes in Fukushima to pregnant women. Yeah, they really want to make an impression that it's really safe to go back when the whole world knows that it's not. I'll be curious to see how many takers they have, but if not, there was a competition this week to see who could be the sickest people in the universe. Japan has announced, and TEPCO, with the most ridiculous Disney mind-controlled, drugged video of stupidity, that they will begin removing or attempting to remove the spent fuel rods, spent fuel assemblies, from Reactor Building 4 within 2 weeks. I've seen one date, November 5th, one November 8th, but it's going to happen very soon, and there has been quite a bit of press about that, which boy, is it full of lies, because as we've been keeping track here and on the Facebook page and elsewhere, we know how serious that situation is. And none of these announcements even pay lip service to what the challenge is, as has been noted on a great many publications. Common Dreams, many others, that this is an apocalyptic situation for the entire human race and all life on the planet. And, let's just get on with this. We'll get into that in a minute. A Texas doctor was gagged this week by a civil court in a civil case, and he was ordered not to tell his patients that they were dying from diseases caused by fracking. Has to do with a confidentiality agreement, I believe, in a malpractice insurance policy. But the money controls everything. Doctors are being gagged, and if you tell the patients they're dying from fracking or radiation, as the case may be, you lose your license to practice or you lose your medical insurance. Around the world tonight, an absolutely evil effort is being mounted. There is a new, extremely high-budget film called Pandora's Promise that pairs along with a new CNN, sometimes I get confused, from a new CNN major story pushing nuclear as the solution to climate collapse. This Pandora's Promise movie, I've watched the trailer for it, is the purest evil I've ever seen. It's evil taking its last best shot to control human consciousness, and I can guarantee you it's going to fail. That's why I'm not getting overly excited about it. You kind of expect this, but this is, for me, a telltale marker that the powers that were are understanding and beginning to grasp that they are the powers that were. We had Barack Obama issue an executive order this week on climate change, which was about lame and a half. I read the government speak. I ran it by Guy McPherson. We both came to the same conclusion that it's the U.S. government cynically just trying to say, well, we tried to do something about climate collapse. I wrote this executive order, and it doesn't say anything. The New World Order people can go crazy, but it's not worth our time. We are dying of hubris at the moment. And now, just today, a story came out that's on my Facebook page. It's on ENE News, quoted from several other sources, including NHK, which has been doing great work in Japan, and I salute them for the coverage they've been giving us that is very helpful. But U.S. Energy Secretary Ernest Moniz has stated he is shocked, he is stunned at the severity of the crisis in Fukushima. Well, where the heck you been for the last 2.5 years, dickwad? Good grief. I mean, this is absolutely absurd, and it's scary because of the absolute cynicism with which all of this absolute evil, banal venality is being shoveled at us at this moment. But it is additional confirmation, as if we needed any, that we are all standing at death's door. We'll talk about that tonight. The second V I want to talk about before I bring Carolyn on is Vice. Vice. HBO Vice. Well, actually, it's not even HBO Vice. It's just Vice. Because what I found out, a three-man crew has been here for a week. There are now two studly guys here in my bedroom with me, which is where I have almost everything in the world that I own. My dog Rags is outside. And I got three cameras focused on me as I'm doing this show tonight. And I don't know what's going to become of this. They've shot many, many, many hours of film, and I'm very pleased with the experience in that. I got to talk about the things that are important to me to talk about. But I also got, I guess if I were to say it, I got filmed walking my walk. I got filmed living my life, whatever appears on Vice, whether it's on the HBO series Vice or whether Vice makes a two-hour special out of it or whatever they do with this film, you will get to see that. And I'm actually very, very grateful that I got to do this, and you guys have been very cool to hang with. Thank you. Okay, so that's Vice. Now, I'm going to bring Carolyn Baker on now, and then I'm going to open up with a theme, because we've had some poignant interchanges this week. Everybody knows Carolyn Baker. She's the only person who's ever subbed for me on this show in the 3 years plus I've been doing it. And she is the author of a whole bunch of books, I think her fifth now. She's the author of Sacred Demise and Navigating the Coming Chaos. Her newest book just out this week, her website is carolynbaker.net. You've known her since From the Wilderness. She and I have walked a long path together. Her newest book is called Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truth for Turbulent Times. And I haven't had a chance to read because I've been running around like crazy with Vice all week, but I haven't had a chance to look at it today. And it's a very necessary book and a very important book. Carolyn and I exchanged emails this week, and in one of her emails, she expressed that she's done with collapse. And funny, we had Dmitry Orlov on last week. You know, he said he's done with collapse, and Guy McPherson's pretty much done with collapse. And guess what, guys? So am I. Collapse always assumed that there would be a place of stability, a place from which whoever survived would have a chance to rebuild anew. But we are now in a place where it is abundantly clear, as my Facebook activity shows, because everybody's just holding their breath now, that between Fukushima and climate collapse, the certainty of near-term human extinction has become, as opposed to collapse, the dominant issue facing all of us, and those of us who love you enough to tell you the truth will talk about it. Carolyn, welcome back on the show. Nice to have you back.
Thanks, Mike. It's wonderful to be here again. And, you know, the point I want to make on the show tonight is not so much that I'm done with collapse, but that we have to reframe it in a different way. You know, many of us assumed that we had 20, 50, or 100 years before the collapse of industrial civilization was complete, and we've referred to it as the long emergency. But the game may be over much, much earlier, and so all that I've been writing and ranting about for 13 years in terms of preparing emotionally and spiritually is not something that we can dawdle around with anymore. Two things worse than collapse, obviously, are in our faces, catastrophic climate change and Fukushima, and I must agree with Guy McPherson when he speaks about our being in a hospice situation, and I'd like to say more about that tonight from my perspective.
Let me just throw out a little epiphany, a visual writer's epiphany, because I've been trying to explain, for the last 2.5 years on Facebook and on the show, ever since I liberated myself from CollapseNet and was free to go in any direction I felt I needed to. If there's anything in the world that scares an adult, that scares people, it's seeing an 8-year-old with a loaded gun, a 7-year-old, a 5-year-old with a loaded gun. It's seeing a 10-year-old in a car with the car keys in the driveway or driving a car. It's seeing children playing with matches. And to all the people who are kind of vanishing at the moment, you know, who have said that all this stuff is man-created, we can control this, we'll have a techno fix, maybe this is HARP, we find the people who are running HARP, we can shut this off and everything will be fine again. The point is that with adults and people who care, when we see a child doing something like that, we understand that children are capable of creating problems which they are incapable of solving. That's exactly where we are, is it not, my dear friend, with Fukushima and climate collapse. We are children who have created problems that we cannot solve.
Well, that's absolutely true. And we're also children who refuse to acknowledge death. Mm-hmm. You know, children don't know much about death, really, because, you know, they're just not wired for it. They're too young. They just got started. Mm-hmm. You know, we in America are not only exceptional, we're invincible, and it's never going to happen to us, and most Americans have never gotten the memo that life is fatal and no one gets out of here alive.
Mm-hmm.
And I contend that this is the number one reason that most Americans will not deal with collapse or climate change or Fukushima.
As I look at your book, your book is going to be fun. Your book is going to be one that I'm going to have dog-eared in many places, because it's one of those books you can open up to almost any place and find something new. But you have 52 weekly meditations, if you will. And as near as I calculate, we're in week 49. No, we're not in week 49. You know what? I just picked this, and I'm going to read this because you can do that.
Go for it.
The cure for despair is not hope. It's discovering what we want to do about something we care about. That's a quote from Margaret Wheatley. And you wrote, in the era of the Obama presidency in the United States, we have heard much about hope. In fact, this word proved phenomenally, turning the page, useful in catapulting Obama to success as a presidential candidate in 2008. He wrote a book called The Audacity of Hope and sold his campaign as an agenda of hope for, quote, change we can believe in. Yeah, we got a lot of change, all right. Today in 2012, the American people feel perhaps, you're right, more hopeless than ever as global economic meltdown, energy depletion, and environmental degradation are closing in from every side. What is needed now is not another marketing campaign based on hope, but clear, decisive action informed by the realities of the collapse of industrial civilization. The political process of nearly every country on Earth is unraveling alongside all of the other institutions of those nations. The action we need to take is not about rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic or tidying up catastrophic train wrecks. Rather, humans need to understand collapse and all of its ramifications and prepare themselves logistically, emotionally, and spiritually as quickly and as thoroughly as possible. That's great. Doesn't that about sum it up? We can wrap the show up now and just talk on.
Well, you know, what I did with this book is I'd always wanted to write a book of reflections. And so I submitted the manuscript with 17 essays, and all of those essays, I believe, were published on CollapseNet at one point, with 365 reflections. And the publisher, North Atlantic Books, said, wow, this is great, but it's too big, and it's going to be too expensive, and translating it into other languages is going to be, you know, huge. So,
optimist.
Well, they suggested that what I do was pull 52 weekly reflections, and those would go in the hard copy with the essays, and then they would take the other 313 reflections and put them into an e-book. So that's the format, and both forms are coming out on November the 19th.
Okay, so and everybody can find these books by, I'm sure Amazon's got a listing already.
Amazon, and you can go to my website, you can go to North Atlantic Books. These essays and reflections are not about making you feel good, although they might inadvertently do that. they are about inspiring and fortifying you as you admit yourself to hospice and evaluate how you want to live the rest of your life. And that's the supreme value of collapsing consciously. Each reflection begins with a quote from some luminary like Carl Jung, Rachel Carson, the poet Rilke, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, Mary Oliver, Thomas Berry, Rumi, just to name a few.
What do they know?
I know. And all 365 reflections are a treasure trove of wisdom from people that have lived through immense suffering and turmoil and have given us a legacy of incredible inspiration to help us navigate our predicament.
There's another theme that I picked up this week. And I think I picked it up from reading Guy. I'm going to have him back soon. Guy has had some profound impact on people lately, and I'm deeply grateful to him for that.
Yes, but, I wrote a review of his book, which is on my site, his wonderful new book, Going Dark. If you go to carolynbaker.net, you can read it.
Which I'm going to be reading simultaneously with yours this week. Well, actually,
cool.
I'll probably have to, you know, flip a coin, but I'm on those. But one theme that I got, and I think I picked it up from, if you will, the dialogue or the dialectic between you and Guy reviewing each other's books, which is that we don't really learn how to love until our hearts have been broken.
Yes.
And the more they are broken, the more love we become capable of. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, in fact, the book that I'm writing next, and it's all done, and I just have to submit it. Love in the Age of Decline, The Relationships We Need to Thrive. And, you know, sometimes people, when they admit themselves to hospice, they have the best time of their lives because they really sometimes in those places learn how to love. They experience a richer quality of life than they've ever known, and sometimes they share belly laughs and meaningful conversations with other people and paint pictures and play music and cry and laugh and feel pissed off, and sometimes they eat well and savor their food and get great massages. And people who work in hospice say that almost without exception that people die the way they lived. So maybe it's time. This might just be a good time to emotionally and spiritually admit ourselves voluntarily to hospice. And, you know, I remember Robin Williams ranting in Dead Poets Society, suck the marrow out of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, in terms of the love, Guy McPherson is very fond of quoting Kurt Vonnegut's son, who, after leaving a mental hospital and before he entered Harvard Medical School, said, we have to help each other through this. And so we need to recognize two things. Number one, we are in hospice, and we must focus now in laser fashion on how we're going to live the rest of our lives. What's our purpose? What do we come here to do? Are we doing it? If not, let's get to it right now. What do we need to be giving right now? Stop the focus on what I can get and start focusing on what I can give. How can I serve the Earth community? How can I make it easier on all the other species? How can I help you, and how can we best hold on to each other and help each other through this, whatever this is?
In other words, we're all supposed to, we should all start living now the way we should have been living the whole damn time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And as I want to share a fabulous quote from one of my spiritual teachers, Leslie Temple Thurston, and she says, when we live with an awareness that death could overtake us at any time and fully let that realization in and accept it, our life becomes more real and fulfilling. So too will we as we face life's challenges full on. With death as our advisor, become completely alive.
There we go. We got two great songs for that, and I think it's probably time for the first song.
Good.
I picked two tonight, and I shared them with you. And there are some songs that I have kind of been saving, if you will, as swan songs. Not that I was ever going to have a date certain when I was going to leave this program or the last show, just only because I knew there was going to come a time eventually when I would be uncertain. We would be uncertain if we could get together again, if we could join in this sacred space that we hold here again. And this is one of the songs that so summed it up. And if you've never seen the video for this song, you must. It's on YouTube. And there's a line in here which summarizes my experience this week. All the words bleed into one. And as I have noticed that my internet traffic, Carolyn, over the last 3 or 4 days, as everybody started really to hone in on Fukushima and understand what's at stake, has dropped off to nothing. And that's wonderful for me because I have so longed for my long 35-year career of scanning, studying, probing, digging in mainstream news, longed for the day when that would no longer be necessary. And I think that's here. But you have to see the video of this song to truly get it, because there's a guy about ready to jump off a building. And it's a beautiful video. It turns black and white, and he's in complete despair. And as he's doing a spread eagle before he's ready to jump off the building, a pigeon lands on his hand and smiles at him. And suddenly everything becomes real again. And this is an amazing song. It's one of my favorite songs of all time, and I have for many years envisioned the moment that I would play it and share it with the people I love. Here's a song called The World I Know by Collective Soul. I know that that song hit home to everybody. Well, let's get in this space. Let's wrap it around us. And let's be here together in tenderness with Carolyn Baker, who's my guest tonight on the Lifeboat Hour. We got 6 minutes or so for the bottom of the hour. So the new book that you're writing, I have to laugh now because I look at everything that I do. I even look at, you know, these Vice guys filming here now, and I'm going, are we going to be alive by the start of the new series season in March, if that's where it airs, or if it airs in 6 months from now? Why do we go through this stuff? And the answer that I keep coming to is something that I wrote on Facebook a couple of months ago. Somebody said, why don't we just roll up and die now and give up? And I said, a warrior in times of great stress like this and when facing imminent death, and these are my words, continues with the daily routines and the daily rituals as if there will be a tomorrow, because it holds open the possibility of victory. Why is it important to keep putting one foot in front of the other, Carolyn?
Well, I mean, you just answered that question. We absolutely have to have a vision of possibility, even if that possibility never happens. Sometimes we have to act as if. And, you know, we need to be – the best use of our time right now is to really be looking at how we've lived our lives. It's time for searching and fearless moral inventories of how we've lived, what was really good and decent and precious about my life, where did I fail myself, where was I less than I could have been, all of those questions.
I had it to do over, what would I do differently this time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are all really, really important questions. You know, The Guardian published recently 5 top regrets of the dying, and this is what they were.
Oh, good.
I wish I had the courage to live a true life, a life true to myself, not the life others expected of me. 2, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. 3, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. 4, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And 5, I wish that I'd let myself be happier.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Those are great.
And they're real and they're true, and that's what people often say in the last hours.
An unlived life is not worth examining, but an unexamined life is not worth living.
Exactly. Yes, you betcha. You betcha. Yeah.
Inventory seems to be, and of course we're hearkening back to roots that I have, and I think you've acknowledged that you have too, in 12-step work.
Yes.
Which has been deeply profound. And if you will, you know, and I've been talking about it openly here for 2.5 years now, that of all the spiritual ways that I study, this is, if you will, just a way to be an electrician, to plug into a wall socket, to have access to a power which you don't have access to any other way. The steps essentially say that if you're hungry for spirit and you get out of your own way, you're going to get fed. But in clearing away the wreckage of your past, what you do then is you therefore open a channel from what is inside of you to emerge to the outside, as the poet Browning wrote.
Right, and it's all about clearing the shadow and diminishing the ego. And, you know, the higher power that is talked about is not out there somewhere. It's inside. Mm-hmm. But it's obscured by our ego and our programming from industrial civilization and, you know, that always gets in the way of that greater higher power that's within ourselves. And that and each other is what we have to hang on to right now.
We are coming down to the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to just do a little break. We're not doing commercials tonight, but I'm going to take a quick break to do a little business here. I have been grateful to so many people on Facebook and so many people who listen to this show, as I have put out calls and statements of need for myself, and I have received so much love. And I think it's kind of funny because I did this, and I don't get paid for this radio show. I don't get paid for the 12, 16 hours a day I do on Facebook. I'm not getting paid by Vice. You guys did not write me a big, big check. I'm looking right at the camera now as I say that. I do this because I love you guys and because I give this away, and it's a gift economy, and you guys have been responding with that. So I've read some names off and I posted on Facebook, but I just want to give great thanks to Ricky Peebles, Joseph Vitaliano, Magnetic, Brenda Lee, Glennie Kravitz, and Felsey, Glenn Caleb, Willard Small, Ricky Peebles. I love Ricky Peebles. That's twice. She got in here twice. Hi, Ricky Peebles. Michael Boatsman, Christine Koch, Grandma Coco, who I love dearly, who's one of my great flank writers and sisters and aunties and friends and whatever out here, and a very cool guy named Chana Maumi, who wrote me a wonderful letter. He's African. And I got this letter, and I just want you to know, brother, that I got the love and I felt the love. If you want to thank me for what I do, or if you want to share in a gift economy and a gift way just because of what I give to you and give back because that makes us feel good, Charles Eisenstein would approve. We are practicing what we preach. You can write to me, Michael Rupert, at 27378 Red Cloud Avenue, Red Cloud, two words, in Moffitt, M-O-F-F-A-T, Colorado, 81143, or you can reach out to me on Facebook. I have a PayPal account. That's as deeply involved in the financial system as I'm going to get. And I just wanted to thank all of you and say that we are rolling without a break tonight, and I express my continued gratitude to Progressive Radio Network for allowing me to take liberties like this, dumping the commercials and running with the flow. It's obviously paying off, but I thank PRN. This is Michael C. Rupert, tracker of truth at the bottom of the hour on the Lifeboat Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Our guest tonight is Carolyn Baker, and we are talking about facing death. And we are also talking about what facing death offers to you in the way of opportunities. And we haven't exhausted that. Carolyn Baker, give us some more opportunities that are staring us in the face here.
Well, there's a couple of opportunities that are coming up in the next week or so. I'm going to be in Bowen Island, British Columbia, next weekend. I'm doing a series of events there, November 8 through 10. If you want to know more about that or register, you can go to two different places. One is Bowen in Transition. That's B-O-W-E-N in Transition, one word, .com. Or you can go to my website at carolynbaker.net. There are also a lot of people who are contacting me these days for life coaching, particularly as all of this becomes more intense and wears on us more. So if you'd like to talk to me about life coaching, please contact me at my email address, carolyn at carolynbaker.net.
And, you know, it's so interesting that you mention BC, because I'm sorry, I didn't put this story into my script for tonight, but I read it, and everybody who saw it on Facebook went crazy. Just a few days ago, there was a university that had sequestered sacred artifacts that were destroyed, confiscated from indigenous peoples up near Seattle. And after 60 years of being away from their indigenous lands, and these were all connected to the famous Chief Seattle. I'm sorry, I should have pulled up the story, but I didn't. But it was, you know, it was sacred items being returned to the land and the people from whence they came. And it just so happened, by coincidence, as it turned out, that the chief of the tribe was on the ferry that was taking these artifacts back to Seattle before transport. And the ferry was surrounded by a pod of three dozen orcas who were singing joyously and escorted the ferry all the way into the dock.
Oh, my gosh.
And this was on Facebook. Maybe I can, well, I won't have time to look it up. I apologize. It's my bad. But you will find it on my Facebook page, just and you can find it by Googling Orca and Seattle. And these items were being returned home to their rightful place. And in this place, we now, on last week's show or the week before, we read this article that went viral, The Ocean is Dead, about a sailor who sailed from Australia to New Guinea to Japan across the Pacific to San Francisco and found nothing but death, waste, destruction, no fish, no nothing, and very horrible things like massive fishing ventures that were destroying whole coral reefs, and they were only keeping the tuna, and 90% of what they caught was alive, and they just killed it and threw it back in the ocean because there was no profit to be made. Same thing's being done off of Fukushima. Right now, there's a limited catch of fish, but it's only certain species. And what these big nets are doing is you know, killing 90 species to pull one, and throwing the trash back in the ocean. That's the way money works. But to see these orcas celebrating this return alive and healthy to me was a remarkably reaffirming, joyous vision that there are still things out there that love us and celebrate us when we do things right.
Yeah, and you know, you're bringing up a very important word there, which is going to be the topic and focus of my next article. I've got this whole series on what collapse feels like, and the last part of the series, the last segment, is on joy. And, you know, this is, as we live in this hospice situation, we need to cultivate joy, create joy, share joy with each other, and drink in as much of it as we can. And the big place to find it is in nature. And these amazing incidences of the other species and the joy that they want to bring us, it's just amazing.
You know, I've been trying to hammer home a point, and this has been true to me in all of the spiritual work I've been doing here in Creston. I did a sweat lodge this week with the guys from Vice, and as I get deeper into it, I have committed to a 4-day vision quest in the spring, assuming we make it there, and I'm preparing for that. That what's hard for people to take, I think, subconsciously, is that after all we have done to Mother Earth and after all we have done to all the living things, the trees, the two-leggeds, the four-leggeds, the wingeds, the stone people, after all that we have done, they still love us unconditionally. And I'm reminded of a line that I heard when I was deeply sponsoring people in 12-step many, many years ago. It was an awareness that came to me after hearing my, 20th, 25th, fifth step, where someone shares their life with another. And the realization came that there's this program that says, if you love me more than I love myself, I will have to destroy you because the pain is too great.
Yeah.
And I think people can't accept that even at this late time, Mother Earth and all life on the planet, everything here still loves us and still wants to help us.
It's truly amazing. It truly is. I mean, I don't even know what to say to that. It breaks my heart, and it makes my heart swell with joy at the same time.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's a line from the old movie Starman with Jeff Bridges, you know, when he was...
That's a great movie.
You know, and he says, you human beings are at your best when things are worst.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
I think that's starting to shine through in a certain extent, because... the absolute cynicism of the powers that be and their absolute impotence now to deal with this, and they're standing naked in front of the world, totally incapable of dealing with the issues that we're facing, leaves open a door. But we are seeing, well, you tell me if you agree, we are seeing a new consciousness emerge here.
I think we are. There are pockets of it. You know, I don't see it, you know, like taking over or anything. But I certainly see many, many more people waking up and just really, really, and people coming to me all the time and saying, I'm waking up now, and what's my purpose? I need to reinvent myself. I need to change my life. I need to, you know, how can I serve? And that's really exciting to help people go down that road.
You know, we are also seeing people rise to the occasion. I played a tape, and I couldn't play it tonight, from the former Japanese ambassador to Switzerland, Mitsuhi Murata, who talked, and this was more than a year and a half ago, that he recorded a compelling video, saying that in Japan we used to have a matriarchal society, and he was couching the whole thing, and he called for the immediate, you know, shutdown of all nuclear. He just called it like it was. It's more than a year old, but he was most eloquent in talking about a restoration of the balance between the male and the female. But something else impressed me this week. There was a Japanese lawmaker, and I should note tonight that the Japanese ruling party has come out and said that TEPCO shouldn't be allowed to touch the fuel rods.
Right. We knew that.
We knew that. And an urgent plea has been issued to the U.S., and the U.S. Department of Energy at this late hour is saying, oh, we're going to help the Japanese. Well, that's General Electric who made the reactor. Never mind. You know, this is so ridiculous. But there was an act of what I call true heroism this week. A Japanese politician, he's a member of the Diet, and his name is Yamamoto, which makes me want to ask if he's related to Admiral Yamamoto of Pearl Harbor fame,
right.
The one who said we have awakened a sleeping giant. But he absolutely broke Japanese tradition this week The caption for the RT story says, Japanese lawmaker Taoro Yamamoto, the third from left, hands letter to Emperor Akihito. He approached the emperor at a ceremony while Empress Michiko looked on during the annual Autumn Garden party. That's a total breach of taboo. And what was the letter about? It was about, Mr. Emperor, we got a real problem at Fukushima, and we need your intervention. And if you have an appreciation, and I know I do, for Japanese tradition and culture, this was unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is ever a time for taboos to be broken, this is it.
Oh, absolutely.
You think we're going to see more acts like this?
I do. I absolutely do. And I think, just the fact that so many millions of people were able to stop the United States from going into Syria, just that whole consciousness, I think, is extremely inspiring and may signal that kind of thing that you're talking about.
Now, we are, let's say we're a week, 2 weeks away from TEPCO trying to remove the fuel rods. I just can't. It's a cross between Lucy and the Chocolate Factory and the Three Stooges, only when
it is.
They drop something, we're all dead.
Right.
You know, which makes it better humor, to me, anyway. But we are also 2 days away from remember the 5th of November.
Mm.
And I'm seeing some signs of some stirring around that. I'm not, late juncture, I'm not sure that I'm going to get my hopes up that we're going to see what we'd like to see. But what would you like to see if everybody got together on the same page all at the same time?
I would like to see, I've always said this, I would like to see a day of grieving, a day in which everything is shut down. And, you know, we have communities, we have organizations, we have schools, we have churches, we have people coming together and building little memorials like they did in Newtown, like they did in 9/11, people coming together and grieving. I don't think we're going to see that, unless something really, really catastrophic happens, which eventually is going to happen. That would be the most honest response to all of this madness that we could possibly see.
I think it might also just allow us all to catch our breath and, if you will, like bandmates, synchronize to a common note.
Yes.
You know? Okay, it's in C. Somebody, the guy on the piano, boom, hits a C. You know, or when that's what we need, and that's what my dear friend Jesse Ray said. You know, she said we have to get everybody on the same page, and I have been longing for that one note to the point where we could all vibrate on the same thing.
Well, that one note is our tears. Really, I believe that one note is our tears, and if we can shed tears together, it would change everything.
Just like in the video, the pigeon landing on the arm of the guy who was going to jump off the building.
Yeah.
And I played a song last week or the week before. There's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in by Leonard Cohen. And there's a line in there that every heart will come to love like a refugee.
Yes.
We are all refugees now.
Yes, we are.
I mean, I was just I was Facebooking today, and there are still people out there who say, "Well, I just go to South America." You know, it's like, well, you know. So I had to digress into a little dialogue about that. For all you people who are thinking of running to South America, let me give you a couple of clues. First of all, not just South America, but the Southern Hemisphere, which would include Australia, New Zealand, Indonesia, and I guess sub-equatorial Africa, although I think Africa, because it's a contiguous landmass and not cut off, would be pretty much toast. Every country has very strict immigration guidelines, and no one can answer about how you go because you have to go to their government website. You have to find out what their qualifications are, and they restrict by age, by income, by marital status, by how many children you have, by what your profession is, by what your bank account is, and by what your credit rating is. You don't think that the, you know, we did so much work at From the Wilderness on Promise Software and all the stuff on the banking and the economy. This is the banks controlling everything. They're not going to let people migrate around the world unless they stand a chance of paying back their debts.
Right.
If you have the slightest criminal record, including a misdemeanor arrest, spousal abuse, DUI, drug arrest, forget about it. You know, you might have family or somebody to sponsor you in those companies, but countries, excuse me. But if you are naive enough to believe you're just going to pack up and go there, the Southern Hemisphere has only one quarter of the land on the planet.
Right. Right.
I mean, these are some really slow campers, and I just thought I'd throw that out because I'm tired of answering the question, you know. And I'm sure we get that completely. But there's also a point, too, where you just choose to stand and face it. Right?
You stand and face it, and you stay in your place, and you do not give in to the delusion that if you go somewhere else, you know, in 12-step programs we talked about geographics,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you go somewhere else, everything will be different. No, because everywhere you go, there you are.
Everywhere you go, there you are. And, you know, some of us have learned those lessons and some have not, but I find it hard to believe that the rest of the world is going to graciously accept on their limited resources they need to sustain their own people from those lands a bunch of gringo European doofuses who created the mess to begin with.
Right. Well, I think the best motto to live by would be this one from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and it's kind of the last thing I have to say, unless you have a question for me. But here's what she said, which I think is the most timely thing of the hour. It's only when we truly know and understand that we have a limited time on Earth and that we have no way of knowing when our time is up that we will begin to live each day to the fullest as if it were the only one we had.
Amen and hallelujah. Let's do this, Carolyn. Let's play a song, and then we've got about 15 or 14 minutes left. So we're going to play a song, and then if you want to call and talk to me or Carolyn, the number is 1-888-874-4888, 1-888-874-4888. But now let's go to the second song that I picked. This guy is a warrior poet, man. He's an Army veteran. He kicked butt in the Army. Smart guy, and he's a great musician. He makes wine. His name is Maynard James Keenan, my kind of dude, a warrior poet. I like this guy, and I totally resonated with this song. He's, of course, with the band Tool, which is a Grammy winner. But his independent solo project is called Pucifer, P-U-S-C-I-F-E-R, Maynard James Keenan. And he talks about a song, the song's title is The Humbling River, and Carol and I understand perfectly that he's talking about the river Styx. Let's mm-hmm. hear the song, then we'll take your calls.
This river. dumb. I face the quakes, the wind, the fire. I've conquered country, crown and throne. Why can't I cross this river?
MJK, Maynard James Keenan, song called The Humbling River. I'd like to thank my Facebook friend Andrew Lindberg for sticking that up on my Facebook page this week and reminding me of it. It was a perfect remind. You know, there are, I see no signs of any callers, which is just fine because I think I know and I feel where the audience is and where everybody who listens. I've developed such a psychic, wonderful bond with all the people, the tens and hundreds of thousands of people who listen to this show, but, you know, all of you stalwarts who are here every week. And I think I feel you out there saying that you are appreciating the fact that there are two elders, a man and a woman, sitting here talking about these dire times, and you want us to hear, you want to hear us talk some more about it. Personally, Carolyn, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I have made this long march for 35 years now, and met so many incredible people. And here at this moment, I know you and I share this, and I know a great many who have walked this walk with us through peak oil collapse and the struggle for human consciousness. I feel personally very, very grateful, and I feel enormously full. Of love and tenderness, and my guess is that we're on the same page there together, right?
We absolutely are, and I am so grateful that I have spent the time of my life that I have spent doing this work, and I know you share that passion. You know, I mean, what would we rather be doing? I mean, I can't think of anything, and I'm just so grateful for the opportunity to do it.
And it's also exceptionally gratifying to me to see, to feel, to walk through the experience of understanding that when I started, I was alone. I didn't know what I was talking about, where I was going, and there was nobody else around. But I feel this enormous spiritual sense and personal sense of community that we do indeed belong to an evolved consciousness that, whether it survives or not in physical form on this planet, I think we can say that our consciousness has firmly established itself here.
I agree with you. And, you know, I want to also say that there is a deep inner strength that we all have that we don't even realize how powerful it is until it's really tested. And I'm just looking down here at one of the quotes in my book from Roshani, who's a Persian poet, and she says, "There's a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief that leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength." And so let's all know that we have profound strength within ourselves that's going to be tested like crazy, but we have it and we can draw on it.
And it will not reveal itself until it is challenged, as we are being challenged now, and more certainly as we are going to be challenged in the very near future.
Yes.
Dang. You know, we live a long life, and we always wonder, many people wonder, and I'm sure many people out there now are in the process of looking at their lives, examining their lives, asking themselves the questions. But I guess the thing that I am more grateful for than anything else is, after having not known what the purpose of my life was for all 35 years that I've been doing what I do, I am glad to see that there is something here toward the end that is making sense of all of it.
Absolutely.
And for you, too.
Absolutely. I'm on that page with you completely.
Yeah. It's like, well, dang, it's really sad, but it's really cool. You can cry and you can feel in the middle of the tear the most amazing warmth and reassurance.
And that means you're alive, and you're human, and you're present, and what an incredible gift.
Well, yeah, it is. And
I mean, do you realize how many people never experience that?
Yes, absolutely. And I guess what I'm celebrating in now is this sensation that I have, this intuition that I have. They're all around the world, all the people who will be listening to this show, not only tonight, but on podcast and iTunes and wherever, you know, Podbean and YouTube and wherever it's going to turn up, that there are going to be a great many people sitting there shaking their heads, nodding and grinning their asses off with us.
That's absolutely right. I can count a whole bunch of them right now in my head.
Well, then, you know what? We all ought to take my hand together as one, because we're going to cross this river. And
yes.
What a great way to cross it. I am firmly convinced that, and this is my own observation, that even though the outcome may be a certainty between climate collapse and Fukushima and the fact that there's still 450 reactors that have to be shut down and most of them are failed, blah, 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 that even though I'm sure we're all cooked, I want to emphasize my inner conviction. I'm sharing this with all the people who I love, and you've been listening to me for a long time now, is that what matters now is what direction you're facing when you meet the end.
Absolutely.
That's going to determine more than anything else what greets you on the other side of the door. Is what you're doing and what your heart is holding, what you're vibrating, what you're feeling when it comes. You know, and I'll speak for myself, but I think this is a truth for all of us. And I've visited many people in hospice, man. I want to greet death head on, man. I want to embrace it. I want to go, this is it. I don't want to miss a second of it. It's just the door. We go through it.
Right. Absolutely.
Carolyn Baker, I am so grateful you're on this planet. Your new book is called Collapsing Consciously, Transformative Truth for Turbulent Times. It has just been released this week. We can find you and read you at carolynbaker.net. You have a way of sneaking up on my Facebook page, whether you want to or not, and that I share it. And we are part of this incredible cabal of great souls. Maybe we are the League of Extraordinary Gentle People. But I'm grateful for the people like Dimitri, like Guy McPherson, and so many we know and work with on a daily basis, you know, like Charles Eisenstein. Special gratitude for my friend Derek Jensen, who has been so clear. I'm feeling love for all these warriors that I have shared the field with, and we're all ready to walk this walk and see where it goes.
Thanks for having me on the show, Mike.
Darrell, you'll be back again, I'm sure. You keep busy, and I will, too. And everybody out there know that Carol and I are two of many who are out here looking out for your silly asses, because I love you to pieces. We all do. This is Michael C. Rupert, Tracker of Truth, on the Lifeboat Hour. Good night. We will see you next week. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.